right, here we go.
All right.
I am hot on this 4th of July parade. I'm buying these costumes. Diving into the news! By the way, we have to win the thing, too. So the judges, if you're listening and you're out there, a little something-something coming your way, if you know what I mean. A little something on the down low, on the huck and hang it, Jacob, you know what I mean? Jacob's going to be the bag man for this.
Oh, right. You're asking for drums and such?
No. Just saying, for the people that are going to be judging the in Edmonds, when we come by, we, you know, make sure the scorecard goes a little up and get a little something on the side.
You did send me a photo of the dollars that I will be reimbursed. It does look like there's a little more there. Maybe I can grease some palms.
You don't get all, yet. That's right, a little something, but to keep that on the down low. Supreme Court rules for a cheerleader punished by vulgar Snapchat. So something happened to her, Tom, that was she kicked off the team or wasn't allowed on the team, and then she Snapchatted out? No?
She was a junior trying out for the senior cheerleading squad, and she didn't make the cut. She could still be a junior cheerleader, but when she expressed her disappointment with a lot of F-words.
Yeah, that's the same thing we're going to do if we don't win that 4th of July parade thing. But apparently it's protected. The question is that she did it outside of school. She was not on the campus. She did it with her friends or whatever, sent it out. A lot of people saw it, shared it. And then the school said, you can't do that. The question is, does your First Amendment right extend beyond the schoolyard? And this thing gets heard in a Pennsylvania court and then goes all the way to the Supreme Court. And what did they say, Tommy?
Well, they decided to, like every Supreme Court, it feels like, does this. They decided to come up with the narrowest of narrow interpretations. Uh-huh. So the Circuit Court of Appeals said that, you know, as long as you're off campus, you can't be held. You know, the school has no power over you if you didn't say it on campus. That's what the 2-1 appeals court ruling was. Yeah. They did not go. The Supreme Court said, you know what? She does have the right, but we're not going to go that far. We're not trying to create a precedent, because they could imagine where somebody said something off campus that would be so disruptive to the workings inside the school that it would indeed, merit school attention. Uh-huh. So all they did was they said, in this particular case, she didn't name the school. She didn't name any individual at the school. She didn't go after the cheerleading judges or the teacher or the principal. She just said, F this is, you know, mm-hmm. school and, you know, cheerleading and everything. Yes. And they said that they could not establish any real harm done to the school. This is a 14-year-old girl expressing her frustration with no disruptive, no threat of disruption at the school, mm-hmm. sent on a Snapchat to only her 250 contacts. So, and with Snapchat, it was designed to go away, except somebody took a screenshot of it and gave it to the mother, who was the head of the cheerleading squad, who then, you know, kicked her off. And so
Clarence Thomas was the only dissent. I think he said
that's right. Because
she's a member of this team, that her actions could cause problems for the team, could cause problems for the school. So therefore, what she said could affect the sort of daily, everyday sort of going on at the school.
See, the heart of what his argument against it, so it was 8-1. Mm-hmm. This, we've had a remarkable string of Supreme Court, as divided as the Supreme Court is in a 6-3 conservative liberal bent. We've had a 9-0 ruling, a 7-2 ruling, and now this is an 8-1 ruling.
That's right.
And what he said in this particular case, I think the heart of what his objection was, that social media, to think that she could say something off campus, mm-hmm. on social media, to think that the social media doesn't reach into the very heart of school campus life, is fudging it a bit. In other words, he thought the school did have the right. He says it's not like she said this in her bedroom to 16, you know, close girlfriends.
Right.
She said it on social media, which means that now it was limited to 250 people, but that might be seeming much. He thinks that eventually we'll have to make a decision about what the role of social media is vis-a-vis school grounds. And he says It's everywhere. We're going to have to face that at some point. Anyway, fascinating issue, I think, all the way around.
Yes, the Supreme Court might, again, get a chance to talk to Jack Phillips, the baker from Colorado, because it was 2017. They said, you know what, Mr. Phillips, it looks like the commission there in Colorado was aggressive and intolerant of your religion, so they ruled that way. The question comes up, does a religious baker, a deeply religious baker, have to make a cake and promote a message that he does not agree with in the practice of his religion? So they didn't really get a chance. Like you said before, Tom, they narrowed most of these opinions. Mm-hmm. They narrowed this one in 2017. But as soon as they said they would hear the case, the phone rang there at Masterpiece Bakery. And it was an attorney on the other end saying, if they hear your case, then I'm going to have you bake a cake. So sure enough, they have a case. So this person who identifies as a female, Autumn Scadrino or something like that, calls up and says, Jack, will you bake a cake that has blue on the Scardina. Outside, pink on the or is it the other way around? Was it?
Yeah, Scardina. Yeah, no, it makes sense. Blue on the outside, pink on the
pink
inside.
Pink on the inside. And he said, yeah, I can do that. And then at that point, the attorney said, good. Okay, then I want this. This is going to be my transition cake. And then at that point, he said, I won't make that. I because I don't agree with that. As a Christian, I see the human body. And he basically explained his religion to her. And at that point, well, bang, good. I'm going to sue you. So now the lawsuit comes back up again, and Jack gets an opportunity to defend his religious beliefs.
So, and the ruling, and this is a lower court ruling, a court in Colorado ruled that this was an anti-discrimination decision on his part, that he is offering a service. And I wonder, you know, John, the problem is with these cases, we don't have all of the details. The closer I looked at this, I wonder if his argument didn't have religious basis. It was just his own, political opinion against the transgender notion. I saw that he argued that same-sex marriage went against his religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the commission decided that that didn't matter showed to the Supreme Court what hostility to religious matters that commission had. And so they ruled on that. This time out, I don't see that there was any kind of commission that ruled that this was based, that his decision was based on religion.
He says that the human body and God doesn't make mistakes, that people are not trapped. He doesn't believe in transitioning. He doesn't believe in any way of changing your body, taking hormones to try to be something other than you are. He sees the creation of the body by God to be sacred, and therefore you don't start messing around with it.
So he is cloaking himself in religion again. So then...
No, I don't think he's cloaking it. I think this is what he firmly believes as a Christian. So I don't know what he's cloaking... this comes from his heart. The question I have what's wrong with this attorney?
Which attorney?
The one that's suing him again. Why not just find somebody else? Why does she need this guy to break to her?
So I think it's not him individually. I think in all these cases, and this goes on every side of the political ledger, you try to find a test case.
Uh-huh.
And what you want to do is you want to get on the books. Okay, like Colorado has passed this anti-discrimination law that you cannot discriminate against trans people. And if you find a test case for this helps clarify. And the thing is, I'm sure that this person who is, I think the attorney herself is trans who brought the case.
Yeah, right.
She's not the one arguing, but she's one of the key here is that this is a test case to determine how far this anti-discrimination can go. And so I think this is going to be one of those test cases where you establish it. Unlike the last time you think the Supreme Court would handle it, they said, no, we're not deciding whether or not he has to make this cake. We're mm-hmm. only deciding that at this point, the decision isn't even, you know, whether he has the right to or not isn't even relevant because you, commission, found, had an undue hostility to religion.
Right.
And so, my question then is, so that was determined in Colorado. The Colorado judges, are they taking into account that ruling? And then how is it not the same kind of thing. And so I was wondering if maybe it, because I don't see any commission argument about it's too hostile to religion, right, if that's an issue or not. And I just don't know.
In this case, Jack will say to you, I'll make a cake for anybody. You're gay, straight, whatever you are. I'll make you a cake. I just won't make you a cake that has a message that I am firmly against. So don't ask me to make something. He sees his cake as not utilitarian, you know, eggs and butter and things like that. But
yeah,
that he has to, it's compelled speech. Very similar to go someplace to a Jewish bakery and have the guy, you know, make a KKK cake or something like that. There was one guy that wanted to test it. He said, okay, I'm going to get a cake. And I'm going to make the gay baker make a cake that looks like a Bible. It says homosexuality is a sin. The court threw that out and said, no, because you're not really affected by it because you're not sort of a protected class. In this case, this attorney, Autumn, whatever the person's name is, goes after specifically at this guy. It's not trying to create a a test case kind of thing. It's not 1965 where the black customer goes and sues the hotel in order for the greater purpose of being able to say, listen, all hotels should accommodate everyone. This person is so vindictive. And once this guy, because she could go across the street, she could go anywhere. She's specifically looking for somebody to get somebody to be able to entrap this guy, to be able to say, you have to bow to me. And what you believe as a Christian doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is that you make my cake. And I'll use the force and the will of the government to have you compelled speech to do something that I want you to do, even though you clearly won't. Why doesn't the person go somewhere else and have the cake made across the street?
Okay, well, I mean, I've already answered that question. I do think it's a test case. I do think
what's the case? What are you testing, Tom?
You're trying to establish precedent that these anti-discrimination laws.
He's not discriminating against her. It's not discrimination against the person.
Okay.
It is discrimination against an idea. He doesn't want to have to make something.
Okay.
Tom, if I came to you and you're a writer and I said, Tom, I need you to write a story for me. Write, and you're Jewish, write a story that says the Holocaust never happened and all Jews are dirty pigs and I want this all in this book. Now you must write this for me because I'm at, and you say, no, I won't write that. Well, why not? Why won't you write that? You said that you are a writer. You're hanging up a sign out front that says you accommodate accommodations. You must write that for me.
Okay.
Why is that? What's the difference?
And so the difference is that's not how writing works. But anyway,
art. Okay, fine. I'll go to an artist. I want you to make something that shows this or shows that. And the person holds deeply religious beliefs, right?
No.
It's the same thing. It's compelled speech for art, Tom. You're not recognizing the guy's religion.
I get your point. My point about the writing and the art is that that's you're not a hired gun. If you're a hired gun, then you're a hired gun. Art people who write, they don't put a shingle up and say, I will write anything you want me to write. If they do, then I think the person would have to write it. And I don't know how this finally got resolved in this state, because I think we took them to court. If you are offering services, you can't decide, I don't like black people, or I don't like Christians, or I don't like homosexuals, and so I'm only going to offer these services, if I'm a plumber, to people that think like I do. Mm-hmm. That's discrimination.
Yes.
And so that's the kind of test case. If you're offering a service in the public, you can't force somebody to make you a cake. But if you put your shingle up and say, I'm a cake maker, I will take orders, then you have to do that. Otherwise, it shows that you're discriminatory. Then the question can become, where do your religious values versus the offering a commercial service clash? And that's what we're resolving as a society.
It clashes when this guy, Jack, says, I make cakes and my cakes are unique and I reserve the right. I don't want to promote a message that offends my religion.
Yeah. And
so
is that part of cake
making?
Therefore,
I won't make you that cake. If you tell me you're specifically wanting a cake with blue on the outside and pink on the inside, I'll do that for you. But then this
unbelievably
vindictive person who wants to not necessarily, you know, show discrimination, because we've already determined that he will make a cake for anybody. He doesn't care what you are.
No, he won't.
No. He said he has gay clients. He's got this client. It's not that. It's the same thing as like the woman, the florist in Eastern Washington.
That's
she has
right.
all sorts of, but I will not produce something
That's
for
right.
something that I don't want to be a party of because it offends my religion. The idea that the government can force forced speech. This guy, hopefully this goes to the Supreme Court. And unfortunately for him, it's going to cost him more money, although he probably gets the thing covered for
him. No, no, no. He's,
but that person needs some serious help. I know, but that woman,
that
attorney needs some serious, serious mental help. Why not go somewhere else? Why does she continue to fight?
Okay.
But now, John, you're not recognizing, you don't recognize the creation that he makes as unique. You don't see it as art.
I'm not even making that decision. I'm saying that in terms of services, this is an issue that got the florist in trouble. If you're offering to make flowers for people, you can't decide, well, I can make flowers for you and not for you. I mean, what if you were a racist and didn't like black people and decided, okay, I'm going to make flowers, but if you're black, I'm not going to make them.
No,
you
that's
can't.
Not it. That, it's not. No, no I, then you're
I'm
discriminating.
That's exactly.
The thought,
it's examination.
Tom.
Yes.
There is thought behind the creation. There's thought behind the creation. He is not discriminating against gay people or black people or anyone. He's saying, I will not make
he's
something.
Discriminating
that
against
I,
trans, maybe.
No, he's not discriminating. He's discriminating against an idea. He doesn't want to be forced to promote an idea. It has nothing to do with the individual as a person. It has to do with him and his rights to be able to practice his religion and not promote an idea. That's the difference. It's an idea. It's not an individual that happens to be trans or whatever else.
Yeah, but it's a service that he's offering, and he's not offering it to some people that are protected by
our anti-discrimination laws. He's offering it to absolutely everybody. He's not producing a product that promotes an idea.
Okay.
You don't see the difference between the two?
I mean, I see a distinction, but I think it's a distinction that doesn't carry a lot of weight for if you're trans and can't get people to respond to you, because a lot of people may
have
that.
That person could go across the street. She is specifically targeting this guy because she wants to hurt him, Tom, because she doesn't, because she's all about diversity and inclusion, but not and tolerance, extremely tolerant people, except intolerant of someone that has an idea that's different from their idea.
We're establishing the length to which discrimination
they're not discriminating against the individual.
Carried. Yes.
It's not against the individual. Yep. Tracy Taylor, look at traffic for us. Before we bring Rachel in here real quick, Jacob, can you take the picture that I sent you of the piper and the drummers and everything and put up on Facebook, because I think we need some help getting some drums. I just bought everybody costumes. All right, Rachel Bell rolls in now. Biggest and best in Northwest. Again, it is neck and neck. Who is bigger and better? You've already succeeded the fact that they have a bigger parking lot than you do.
Yeah.
But when it comes to just overall fun and entertainment, it is one of these things. It's like, do we go to Rachel Bell's house? Parking's a problem. But Muckleshoot Casino, the biggest and best in Northwest when it comes to entertainment.
Yeah, we're still trying to figure out how to vote on this. I mean, should we put the vote out to the audience? I mean, why do they keep having a panel of four people to decide who's the biggest and the best?
I know.
Because it's always a tie. And why don't they just have five people for the tiebreaker?
I don't know.
Ranked voting.
We have to do that.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, that's the problem with this country. Yeah.
All right. Arbel, did you get a chance to look at the story about Colorado?
Colorado, that's a song I am singing to you. Yes. Okay, so there's a lot of big companies in this country who are putting up job ads for remote positions now that can be performed anywhere in the country. But a lot of these ads are saying you can work anywhere except Colorado. So Colorado has a new law called the Equal Pay for Equal Work Act. And it requires all companies, even small companies with just a few employees, any company operating within the state has to disclose the expected salary or the pay range for every role that they advertise, and that includes remote positions. So the idea is that this will provide pay transparency for employees, which means that there shouldn't be as much of a gender wage gap or a racial wage gap. But for some reason, a lot of companies don't want to disclose the salary. So in the ad, they say people who live in Colorado need not apply, which actually means that they don't understand what's happening because it's only for companies located within the state. So if you're a New York company and you're looking to hire remote workers, you can hire someone from Colorado. It doesn't mean that you have to disclose in your ad. But plenty of companies like Johnson & Johnson, for example, are putting in their ad that Coloradans are not welcome. So, for example, work location is flexible if approved by the company, except that position may not be performed remotely from Colorado. So some are wondering if there's legal discrimination here. Can you say that you know, some people from an entire state cannot be hired for a job? So the Colorado State Department of Labor and Employment, they've opened an investigation because there's been a complaint about companies who are excluding Colorado residents. But Amazon has complied with this. They listed a software development engineer job, work from anywhere at Amazon. They said that the position in Colorado ranges from $116,000 to $160,000 a year. And on the ad, it says, we are listing this because of Colorado's Equal Pay for Equal Work Act. I love this. I'm sure we've talked about this before. I'm a huge fan for wage transparency. I learned about it more after local ice cream company Molly Moon's started doing wage transparency. Yeah. I think that if you are not willing to disclose what you're going to make, and it doesn't have to be a firm number, you can put like Amazon did, 116 to 160. That's a huge range. You have something to hide. You know, that means that you're not hiring people fairly. That means that you don't think you're paying a competitive rate. And I think that says a lot about companies who will not release the amount, because I think that it wastes a lot of people's time also. You know, what if you go through the whole process? Sometimes companies don't tell you what the salary is until you're interviewing. And then you get to that point and you go, oh, that's like $30,000 less than I'd accept. I don't want this job. Mm-hmm. So I think for everybody, it makes sense to disclose the potential salary.
Afterwards, do they also have to, does Colorado make them also put the number of people hired? They also have to fill out other forms regarding the male-female ratio. Do they also have to fill out and explain what the people are being paid? Or is it just on job applications?
What I'm reading is it's just on job applications, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were doing other research because they probably want to track this and see what results they get. But maybe they're just going to continue to track the amount of money that men and women make, et cetera, and from there say, oh, it changed ever since we passed this law.
Uh-huh. Well, it seems to be biting them in the rear end right now because they end up getting less opportunities in Colorado, huh?
Yeah, just for now. But they are looking into it and doing that investigation. So it might be illegal. But I'm a part of this online women's podcasting group. And there's an email chain. And every once in a while, you know, people will post a job. And there's a lot of people who work in public radio on the chain. And through this, I have learned that in the public radio sphere, it is completely expected to post a salary in a job posting. So anytime someone posts a job and doesn't include the salary range, everybody goes bananas and jumps on them and asks for it. And if it's not given, they delete the posting. So in some sectors, it's already accepted. And I hope that that widens throughout the community.
We've talked about this in the past, but every school teacher, every, federal government employee, I mean, this is all a matter of record. So it's not like it's the end of the world. However, and again, this is sort of goes against my grain, but I'm wondering if the argument could be made on the business side of things that they say if they, especially if it's a remote kind of job, we want to pay somebody in Wyoming differently than we want to pay somebody who's in downtown Manhattan because of the cost of living differences and all of these. Is there an argument that could be made that the transparency just muddies the water unnecessarily? Or in your ideally transparent world, Rachel, would it say, if you work in Colorado, you'd be making $110,000 or to $160,000. If you're working in Manhattan, you'd be making $140,000 to $200,000. And if you're, living wherever in Timbuktu, it would be this or that. Mm. I'm just wondering if the limitations of the information is what gets in the way of more businesses jumping on saying, hey, I'm transparent too.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, it would be kind of ridiculous to name every city in the country in your ad and what the pay would be. And, you know, in this ad for Amazon, that range, 116 to 160, that does leave a lot of room for error. Because, you know, let's say two people applied and then there still was a discrimination because they gave them the high end instead of the low end. So, I don't know. We'll
or the guy would get 160 and the woman would get 116.
That's exactly.
Then why not hire just all women? If women really are paid 80 cents on the dollar, why would anyone hire a man? Because the numbers, that's not actually true, right? Because if businesses are in the business of making as much money as they can, why hire a guy? Why hire a guy and pay him 60 out? Why pay a guy $60,000 more? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, there is that whole argument about culture fit, John. We talked about this, you know, in the way it manifests itself.
Right, but you could save $60,000 on every single employee. Why wouldn't you have all women working?
Well, I think the idea isn't to have everyone make less money. It's to have everybody make same money.
Yeah.
Oh, so everybody's equally as good, male or female? It has no.
Well, I mean, it depends on the position. Yeah. No. It depends on the job. If you're a software designer and this is the slot you're in, whatever it is, it's probably discriminatory if you pay men more than women. But if there's range within that, you base it on all sorts of experiences.
So you can discriminate it based on somebody's talent.
I don't think that's discriminating.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not quite sure. Are we talking about the same thing? Like, if you're a lawyer and you win more cases than you lose, you'll probably get offered more at another law firm than you would if you lost all your cases.
It's
so,
called a discriminating buyer. Somebody that is careful with their dollars, right?
The difference is that you don't choose your gender or, you know, it's like those are the things discriminated against, your race, your gender, your sexual preference. Like if somebody happens to be better at a job than somebody else, that's because of whatever reason. Maybe they're smarter. Maybe they worked harder. And I'm sure there's discrimination there as well. Of course, not everybody doesn't get the same opportunities. But I think the discrimination comes in areas that you can't control.
Ah, all right. Thank you, Art Bell. Appreciate it. You are the biggest and best in Northwest. I don't care about
parking. Are you the tie-breaking judge?
I didn't want to say anything. I'm the guy that wears in that dancing thing with we've got the big thing on, the big mask.
The thing with the thing. Anyway,
yeah,
why is there glitter falling from my ceiling right now?
Crazy tail, look at traffic.
John. You want me to jump in here, Jacob?
Yeah, it's probably a good idea. I don't know if John maybe
I was busy buying a costume.
I was
going
to say, I assume this had something to do with the Edmonds float.
Yeah, I was on with Amazon trying to buy.
No harm, no foul.
Tom, I don't know what size you are. What size jacket do you wear?
Like
a men's jacket.
Let me see.
You're 43 long?
Yeah, that would be good. That probably would fit.
Okay, that's what I ordered you.
Okay, good.
All right, isn't that nice that I know your sizes? What does that say about me, huh? That says a lot about me.
I was going to say 44, but okay.
You know, I can do 44 long as well. Okay, Jacob, by the way, do place that picture so we can get more people to be able to... drums now, drums.
Right.
And Tom, you have to be willing to mess up your hair.
Oh, my God, my hair is a mess already. It's like 6 feet long and
perfect.
Wild, so we'll do anything with it.
All right, if we were to do all dressed as baseball players, we could have sticky stuff, and then you could end up having Johnny Boy narrating how the Nationals pitcher, this guy, has to be checked by the umpire because he's got sticky stuff.
In the fourth inning, he starts touching his hat. Joe Girardi, opposing manager, licks his fingers. Not going to lick your fingers if you got gross stuff on there. He gets the strikeout. Joe Girardi talks to the umpires and says, hey, that dude's rubbing his head through his hair, and I don't like it. So the umps get together, and they're like, let's check his hair. And he's like, what are you guys talking about? Oh, come on again.
So he's out on the mound, and the umps are standing there. They make him take his hat off, and they're going through his hair, and they're looking at him. So these umps are basically just sort of doing like a body search on these pitches in the Major League Baseball to see if they got sticky stuff anywhere.
And Girardi's like, this is serious business. And Scherzer's like, are you serious? Really? You checked me twice already? Okay, here you go. Here's my hat. Here's my belt. Here's my pants. I'm just like, come on, stop. Save that for later. He just wants us to touch your head a little bit. And Scherzer just tells him, I got nothing. Go ahead. I want to touch my hair. Okay. Touch. That's so creepy.
Does he end up dropping his pants at some point, Tom?
So there are two different instances yesterday. A different pitcher in a different game took down his pants, you know, all the way down to his knees because he's so disgusted. Because one of the things they want to check is see if you're hiding it somewhere in your belt. So both of these guys, it was perfect. Scherzer, Matt Scherzer is one of the best pitchers around. He's having a great game. And the umpire has it. You can check it at least once a game. And he checked him twice. And now, the third time round, the Phillies manager says, I want you to check him because he's touching his hair. At that point, he's just so irritated and frustrated because they have to stop the game to do this. And he just takes his belt off. He says, here. He goes to start to take his pants off. In another instance, the guy actually lowered his pants. He said, this is just ridiculous. And it can be used against him. If you're the opposing manager, you can say, hey, I think there's something suspicious there. They just can stop his flow.
So I think at some point they're going to try to be able to say, okay, if we catch you, then we get the ball, we look at the ball, you put something on the ball, obviously it's come from you, so therefore, and then they said that they would have assessed them, like, take a, how are they going to sort of put some sort of number upon it? Is it that they're taking away a run? But that's not fair because...
Yeah, you're just assessed. Yeah, you're kicked out of the game, and then you can't play for 10 games.
Oh, that's right. The pitchers can't play for 10
games. And if you're a pitcher, you pitch every, 3, 4, or 5 games, 5 days, so that's a couple of starts, and you can't replace them. That's the other, the best thing about the punishment is you can't just get another pitcher to come in there. It's like, you've got whoever's on your staff, that's who you're stuck with.
Gee whiz.
Yeah,
well, I mean,
crazy.
You do something like that, that would certainly change things. And again, for the people who don't follow it, you put something sticky on the end of the ball, which allows you to hold on to the ball as long as you possibly can before you let the ball go, so that the end of your fingertips, imagine just the very, very end of your fingers, are able to make contact with the ball. As your hand comes through, you can put an additional spin on the ball. You're zipping the end of the fingertips to the last little part of the thing to touch the ball. Makes the ball spin a particular way, which then helps with sinkers and curves and goofballs and everything else that goes with it. So I'll tell you, it is exciting to watch, though, because when you're like, they got something on there. I mean, I was watching that. I love that game. You share that window, and that ball comes in there and drops right out and drops right into that window. Oh, my God. It's a fun sport to watch for about 5 minutes. Are you still watching lots of baseball, Tom?
No, I'm completely into the NBA playoffs now, so I haven't watched a stitch of baseball.
All righty. Okay, Tracy Taylor, look at Trey. By the way, Tracy, should you be in this? You want to be in the parade? What are you doing July 4th?
Well, I thought I was, and so I was just kind of waiting for you to
of course you
say
are.
Something.
I wanted to make sure you're still on board. I know you probably had lots of other offers.
I have lots of other offers. No, okay. I don't. I have no life.
Okay, Jacob, get her a costume. This is very embarrassing. Okay.